WHQR's MC Ernie Gallery in downtown Wilmington. Welcome to this Coastline Candidate Forum of 2015. I'm your host and moderator, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we bring you the candidates running for Wilmington City Council. This is a sizable race, 8 candidates competing for 3 open seats, and so we have allotted 2 hours in order to hear from the candidates on a comprehensive range of issues. We will take a short break at the top of the hour for the NPR newscast. If you'd like to listen and watch this forum, visit our website at whqr.org, where you'll find today's live stream, audio and video, and we welcome those of you tuning in to HQR News at 91.3 FM. Today, we are joined by all 8 candidates for Wilmington City Council and a small live studio audience. Isabel Shepherd is also with us today. She's typically in the role of Coastline producer, but joins me here to ask questions of the candidates. Isabel Shepherd, welcome.
Thanks, Rachel. Happy to be here.
If you're hearing us on Wednesday, we are live. Saturday is a rebroadcast. During this live Wednesday broadcast, we encourage you to email your questions to coastline@whqr.org. You can find us on Twitter at @CoastlineHQR. And if you're considering a question, we ask that you write it in the form of a question, no statements allowed. It must fit within a 30-second time limit, and it must be relevant for all the candidates. The city of Wilmington is governed by a nonpartisan council consisting of a mayor, mayor pro tem, and 5 council members. All members of council represent the entire city. There are no districts. Elections are held every 2 years. The mayor serves a 2-year term, and council members serve staggered 4-year terms. This year, the race for mayor is uncontested, and Bill Saffo will continue in that role for a 6th term. Now let's meet the candidates for Wilmington City Council in alphabetical order. Neil Anderson, one of 2 incumbents, has served on City Council for the last 4 years, where he's been a board member of the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority and the Bellamy Mansion, a member of the Ports and Waterways Committee, and chair of the Legion Stadium Commission. Neil Anderson was born and raised in High Point and has been a self-employed territory manager in the furniture industry for 25 years. He and his family have lived in Wilmington for the last 14. He's a married father of 3 with children at Forest Hills Elementary, Williston Middle School, and New Hanover High School. The family is active in First Baptist Church. Welcome, Neil Anderson.
Thank you.
Hollis Briggs Jr. has worked for the Kellum Law Firm as the regional marketing director and field investigator for the past 3 years. He graduated from Hoggard High School in 1975 and relocated to Atlanta. Since his return to Wilmington in 1999 after the passing of his father, he's been a community advocate. Hollis was appointed by Governor Mike Easley as battleship commissioner and was reappointed by Governor Bev Perdue. Mr. Briggs also serves as chairman of the MLK Celebration Committee. He is the father of 3 boys and 2 girls. Welcome, Hollis Briggs.
Thank you very much.
Margaret Haynes is also one of 2 incumbents and is the current mayor pro tem. She was appointed to the city council in 2009 and then elected 2 years later. She serves as chair of the council's appointments committee, is a member of the naming committee, is the council's representative on Wilmington Downtown, Inc., and is a Thalian Hall trustee. Margaret Haynes is a North Carolina native and a retired federal employee, having worked for a member of Congress from Virginia's 6th District. She's a founder of a community bank currently traded on NASDAQ. She continues to work on her golf game, loves the beach, backwater fishing, and playing bridge. She's a fairly recent widow and lives with her English Cocker Spaniel, Sweetie. She has a son and 2 granddaughters. Welcome, Margaret Haynes. Deb Hayes has served as president of the Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors and on the boards for the North Carolina Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors. She's a member of the steering committee for Wilmington's comprehensive plan, is chair of the Wilmington Planning Commission, is on the Early Gardens Foundation board, and is committee chair for the North Carolina Azalea Festival. She recently served as chair and is a current commissioner of the Wilmington Housing Authority and Housing Economic Opportunities. Deb Hayes has served on New Hanover County's Special Board of Equalization and Review and on the Greater Wilmington Chamber of Commerce Board of Advisors. She has experience as a bank officer, a college financial aid director, and was a longtime employee of IBM. She has one daughter. Deb Hayes, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate you all having us here.
Paul Lawler, a native North Carolinian, worked for 30 years as a licensed CPA. During that time, he worked with economic development organizations. He is the immediate past president of Residents of Old Wilmington, or ROW, and has served on the boards of Wilmington Downtown, Inc. and WHQR. He is now a member of the city's Comprehensive Plan Committee. Paul says he wants to promote a stronger and more diverse local economy. He's married to Patricia Lawler. Welcome, Paul Lawler.
Thank you.
Frank Madonna served 3 years with the U.S. Navy in Vietnam and then spent 10 years in the public sector. He served as assistant administrator and assistant commissioner for two municipal government agencies in New York City. He then worked for 25 years in the telecommunications industry in senior executive positions with companies such as MCI and Global Crossing. Since retiring, he's become involved with a number of local organizations, including Cape Fear Community College Foundation, Good Shepherd, the Landfall Homeowners Association, and the Wounded Warrior Program. Frank is married to his wife of 46 years, Donna Madonna. Frank Madonna, welcome.
Thank you very much.
John Presswood has been a small business owner and appraiser with Port City Appraisal Wilmington for 15 years. He's also a real estate broker with Wilkinson and Associates ERA. His volunteer activities include being a soccer coach, feeding families with interfaith, and serving as a committee member with Wilmington Downtown, Inc. and the Wilmington Board of Adjustment. He says his main goals are to create access to better-paying high-tech jobs, a better transportation network, and better public safety.
Thanks for
having
me.
John Presswood, welcome. Alvin Rogers is a native of Wilmington. He and his wife, Sandy, have three sons, Brad, Adam, and David. He's worked at Rogers Appliance for over 45 years and is now president. He's also served on the City Planning Commission and the Subdivision Review Board. He attends and volunteers at Life Community Church. He's interested in improving roads and traffic flow in Wilmington. Welcome, Alvin Rogers.
Thank you, ma'am.
Format goes like this. Isabel and I will begin with our prepared questions. Candidates will have 90 seconds to answer each question. We'll rotate the order in which the candidates answer. There will be no opening statements to allow more time for questions. Kate Brandis, our master timekeeper, will signal when 30 seconds remain. Then again, at the 15-second mark, she will ring the bell when time is up. And you don't have to cut off your sentence. We just ask that you finish it in a timely manner. We will incorporate audience questions as they come in and as we can. Remember, you can email questions to coastline@whqr.org. At the top of the hour, we'll take a 5-minute break. In the final segment, each candidate will deliver a closing statement. And if we need to go to a speed round in the event of a time crunch, we'll ask the candidates to give abbreviated answers. And if you are listening and would like to call in your question, you can do that at 910-343-1138. Let's begin. Isabel, please direct your first question to Neil Anderson.
When first constructed, the CSX rail line encircled the edges of Wilmington. However, the city has grown, and there are now at least 31 railroad crossings with thousands of cars passing over them each day. And now freight traffic in Wilmington is likely to increase due to the new Vertex Rail and wood pellet industries. And the city's population is expected to balloon over the next couple of decades. How would you address the potential safety issue of overlapping vehicular and train traffic?
Well, unfortunately, short term, there's probably not a whole lot we can do. Long term, we're very fortunate to have Glenn Harbeck and our planning staff. He, really shot at the moon and came up with a plan that I support strongly of moving, of not using those tracks for commercial purposes, but rather to cross the Cape Fear River south of the bridge and you go up our 421 corridor, which is an industrial development space that's yearning for something like that. It would take all the commercial traffic out of the city. We could then potentially use those tracks for a trolley system, which I think would really help in terms of moving folks around and having less cars on the road. Some people might be saying, good, you know, that's terribly expensive, never going to happen. Well, the state's in the process right now of looking at a more expensive project up in the Morehead City area. So this would actually be cheaper, and our port's more further developed and ready to handle the traffic than Morehead. So that would be the option I would pursue long-term with our state legislators and our governor.
Thank you. Hollis Briggs, same question. And if anyone would ever like a question repeated, just ask.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Absolutely. When first constructed, the CSX rail line encircled the edges of Wilmington. However, the city has grown, and there are now at least 31 railroad crossings with thousands of cars passing over them each day. And now freight traffic in Wilmington is likely to increase due to the new Vertex rail and wood pellet industries. And the city's population is expected to balloon over the next couple of decades. How would you address the potential safety issue of overlapping vehicular and train traffic?
That's a great question. First off, I would like to say we have worked with the NCDOT in repairing those crossings. They were in deplorable condition until recently. We had a series of public hearings, one being at St. Andrew's AME Zion Church, where we met with the NCDOT Railroad Division, and we talked about the safety issues of that. And the city has came up with a comprehensive plan to put in $100,000 to look into moving the railroad, moving the commercial part of the rail on the other side of the river. I am in agreement with keeping the rails there and possibly using it for, as Mr. Anderson said, a trolley of some sort to alleviate traffic.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. It's a problem that no one foresaw many, many years ago, and we have changed so much as a community. I think it's definitely an important issue to try to resolve it. And there all types of communities are impacted by this. Just recently, the railroad asked us to close off a number of streets, which would make dead ends, and I think that is a very negative solution to decrease the idea of connectivity, which we're always working for in the community. We've had accidents at Love Grove. There are just a number of reasons why the railroad is no more effective. The track is not effective anymore in the city. And when we were looking at Independence Boulevard and this horrible elevated thing, it occurred to me, and I drew it out on a napkin, that if we didn't have the railroad track making that U east of Randall Parkway, that we would solve an awful lot of solutions. And I guess they took that and ran with it, and I think it's a great idea, and I voted for the $100,000 to study this, and I think we've got to do something because everybody's sleep is impacted negatively, and also I just learned that the trains are going to be double stacked, so it's going to be one car on top of another coming through the city. So we're working towards it. I think it's a great solution to move it over into an industrial area across the river. Thank you.
Thank you. Deb Hayes.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I was thrilled when the city council apportioned the $100,000 to initiate a study for this, and even more so, the railway and the rail bed becoming a trolley with green space, which and walkway around it. This will spark neighborhoods and developments all along that pathway, creating connectivity and walkability for our neighborhoods, especially Love Grove, that may not have as many connections in as they need and desire. I think this will provide the ports with a real economic development advantage because they will have a straight track into them, not going through the neighborhoods, which is exactly what the commercial rail system would like to see. I think it will be a win-win for everyone across the board.
Thank you. Paul Lawler.
Thank you. This issue really highlights the challenge that transportation is going to be for Wilmington in years to come. As we grow and we have more people and we are a more densely populated city. The city's done something very interesting here, and that is to propose moving the rail across the river. And they've done a nice job of identifying the many, many organizations that should support this and would benefit from that sort of change. And that's much better than what DOT had proposed. DOT was proposing closing off many streets, which would create a lot of congestion and clogging on our streets, which would not be a good thing. So I think this is a great approach, and I look forward to seeing how it plays out.
Frank Madonna.
Yes, thank you. You know, Wilmington's a fantastic place. It's amazing the number of interesting and talented people that live here. We have in our midst the former chairman of the CSX Railroad. And at the event the other evening, I've had an opportunity to sit down and talk to him about this issue. I've said in the past that railroads have no place in neighborhoods, and they certainly don't. But the logistics of getting them out of the neighborhoods is extremely complex. And also you have to make sure that the port is preserved, because the port is crucial for economic growth in the area, and economic growth is the key to making Wilmington an even better place to live. So that said, it's a very complex issue, and I'm glad there are studies underway to look at it. But moving the railroad tracks across the river, according to the people that I've been speaking to, will make the problem greater, not better. But I don't know enough about it to say yes or no, but from what I've heard, I'm just happy that we're studying it. And my position is that railroads have absolutely no place in neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods have grown around the railroads.
John Presswood.
Railroads and neighborhoods. I think they do have a place. I think we can turn them into commuter rails, at least in the next couple of decades. It's cheaper to get trains in here than to rip them all out and move them across, you know, move them out. It's a very costly and expensive item. So it's infrastructure. I don't want to lose it. I am in favor of the second access into the port, the second bridge. That would be great. But I'd like to tie in a rail and reconnect Raleigh and Wilmington. I'd like to bring passenger rail from Charlotte to Wilmington. So I'm in favor of leaving them as is right now. If the study comes back positive, yeah, maybe we can look at it, but I think it costs a lot of money and a lot of time.
Thank you. Alvin Rogers.
Yes, ma'am. The rail line needs to be moved out of town. Bringing it down 421 and crossing there at the state ports would solve many problems. As far as the rail line that was left behind, it's for a heavy rail, so the trolley would have no trouble servicing as a light rail system on the existing tracks. And I would be in favor of that.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Coastline Candidate Forum for Wilmington City Council, broadcasting on 91.3 FM and streaming live at WHQR.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn with WHQR's Isabel Shepherd. If you'd like to ask a question during this live broadcast, send an email to coastline@WHQR.org or give us a call at 910-343-1138. Where Meg Young will take your question and send it to us. And we have a question from Seth, who writes, recently, a study concluded a road diet on Market Street through the historic Carolina Place and Carolina Heights neighborhoods would cause too many traffic delays to implement. Another study shows accident rates there are almost double the state average. The issue of congestion versus safety seems to be citywide. What types of transportation solutions would you advocate for if elected? And would you be willing to create longer commute times for people in Ogden and Porter's Neck if it meant fewer accidents and improved pedestrian safety? We'll begin with Hollis Briggs.
That's a very, very complex question. Traffic is a serious issue in Wilmington, and with the population booming in the next decade or so, we are really going to have to make some positive moves to decrease the congestion of traffic in the city of Wilmington. Now, there are some issues, of course, that are coming on before us with the Independence Boulevard extension, that needs to be looked at. Some people would like to see it on an elevated, and some people would like to see it at grade. I haven't done enough study to determine which one would help the city of Wilmington better. I know there is some serious issues about traffic. I live on one of the busiest streets in Wilmington, and that's 16th Street, which feeds directly into Market Street. As a matter of fact, that was the 17 business route at one time, so we got a lot of traffic, somewhere around 20, 22,000 cars a day. So I've dealt with traffic all my life. I've lived on 16th Street since 1950s. We've owned that residence. So traffic is really a serious problem, and we're going to have to take a look at it. However, some people don't want change. And to put new roads into Wilmington, there's going to have to be some change, and progress normally is kind of ugly.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. First of all, let's note that Market Street is a state street, and that the responsibility and making decisions is not wholly in the hands of the city council and the city. That said, the road diet has been studied, and I understand the frustration of the people that live along there, and there's a lot of dread for people to drive down there where it's so narrow. But we have had two parking studies that show basically if you do the road diet, which for people that don't understand is basically putting the street on a diet and narrowing it down so that they're not four lanes of traffic. There have been two studies. They've both shown that basically Market Street becomes a parking lot and that traffic moves very slowly. That said, even though the studies show that, I don't believe it's an either-or situation that you have to risk safety in order to, instill better time lapse for people to get somewhere. So I think we could do a trial run on that if we were trying to work with the state and try to figure out what to do. But we could attempt it. We don't want to be moving traffic into the neighborhoods on either side of Market. So I think it's certainly something that we need to continue to look at. Thank you.
Deb Hayes.
Thank you. Certainly, when you're taking a look at traffic congestion versus safety, your first and foremost issue is safety, and it is a concern. We have a lot of traffic in this town. One of the things that we must take into consideration as well is our growing pains, and it is not going to be pleasant for everyone as we move through this. But with the studies that they're currently doing, I like putting Market Street on a diet. I think that's great. But one of the ideas that we could have with that is to provide parking areas and bring people in and then use multimodal transportation to get them out to where they need to be for work, things like that. We have a lot of different ideas, and I know the City Council has been working feverishly to try and address a lot of these issues. I think we need to be very creative. We need to certainly look at making sure that we're having connectivity with our neighborhoods and providing alternative transportation realms, green paths, blue paths, that type of thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Lawler.
Thank you. Transportation is going to be one of those tough issues for a time to come, and unfortunately, Raleigh has very little money to help us with, so we have to look to local solutions. Some of the things we need to work on, of course, would be signalization, so we move rapidly through intersections, look at the wave transit system so that can carry more of the transportation load and get some of the cars off the street. We look at how we developed. Osteria Cicchetti just opened a branch down by in the south end of the city, so people who live down there don't have to drive all the way up to Mayfair to enjoy that restaurant. So how we develop is important. For the Market Street diet in particular, though, one issue there is a highway going through a residential area, and we need to consider whether it's really wise to have a highway in a residential area in 2015. But something for the short term for that area would also be look at speeding. They have the road gets very tight there, and they have speeders, which makes it very dangerous. But if we can work on some of the speeding and traffic compliance, then we can address an issue now and make that a much better situation.
Thank you. Frank Madonna.
I just want to pick up on what Margaret had said about the traffic and transportation. And I was surprised, too, that a lot of the road work is really not the responsibility of the council, but is the responsibility of the state. The second surprise is that the DOT lags way behind our growth. So, in fact, when you go to a meeting and we talk about Market and Eastwood Drive, the plans are on the board for 2022, but it's 2015. It's going to be 7 years before we get relief there. So it's a difficult problem, and our planning and development is outstripping DOT's capability to support. So there's a hole in the process, and I haven't the slightest idea how we fill that hole. We could put a moratorium on some building and development, and we could make sure that traffic considerations are taking into account before we build and develop, and I'm not sure we're doing that right now.
Thank you. John Presswood.
I got both hands on the wheel. I'm going down that section of Market Street. Is that guy next to me going to hit me? That's what you're thinking about. I hate to say it. It's scary going through that section. I guess we do need a little bit of a road diet there. It might help. It's worth experimenting. The other thing I think we need to do is finish Independence Boulevard. 1.7 miles, we need another north-south corridor. The other thing is we got to start developing in a smarter, more thoughtful manner. We can't outstrip our resources. We can't outstrip our infrastructure when we're developing. I want progress, but I want it to be smart. Smart use of our infrastructure, smart use of our land, and let's preserve the city. Thanks.
Thank you. Alvin Rogers.
We already have a street in Wilmington with a road diet on it. It's called South College Road. It doesn't move traffic that well at many times in the day. I think doing the same with Market Street would create more congestion. Whether lowering the speed limit, the state, again, controls everything, whether lowering the speed limit might help, I'm not sure, but I don't think we should try the road diet on there. We've had other roads where the city has experimented. Front Street at one time was a pedestrian mall. Then it was made one way. The natural way a road is in Market Street, you have a two-lane road going into it without any way of dispersing it. You're just going to jam it up worse.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
I think there's two pieces of this. From a macro standpoint, the governor changed the way he wanted to budget DOT dollars in the last couple of years. And unfortunately, we think we have a lot of traffic, and we do for our size city, but everything now is based on pure car count. So when you're comparing yourself to Raleigh, Charlotte, Greensboro, you're not going to get as much funding where it used to be regional. So we need to push our legislative group to try to get that changed and where we get some of that money back to us. From a micro standpoint, the road diet, the problem we have, I think Mr. Presswood mentioned it, is we don't have enough north-south main arteries. All we do, if somebody's trying to get to I-40, it's right-left, right-left, and left turns are the dangerous piece. If you're trying to get to the hospital, it's right-left, right-left from the north. So the state had proposed a partially raised, to finish out Independence, that boulevard. And it ties into the first question. It was raised to get over Market Street, and it was raised for the railroad. Taking the railroad out would save $40, $50 million, some say more. That money could go into the pot to help move that railroad. But that's been killed at this point. The two are tied together is what I'm getting to here. You can't go on a road diet there until we have some other infrastructure to relieve that traffic. Should there be an island there? Yes. But we can't do it until we have other alternatives for our traffic.
Thank you. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Forum for Wilmington City Council in 2015, if you're just tuning in. We are streaming live today, audio and video, at whqr.org. And welcome to those listeners who are joining us at HQR News 91.3 FM. If you'd like to ask a question, you can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or give us a call at 910-343-1138. Isabel Shepherd, please direct your next question to Margaret Haynes.
The Garner Report recommended implementing an economic incentive policy to facilitate growth. Last year, the city and New Hanover County agreed to prioritize this goal. What is your stance on economic incentives, and what key components would you include in such a policy?
Wow. What a good question. The Garner Report did talk a good bit about economic incentives. And out of that report, we have tried to work with the county, and we've had two joint meetings to try to look at what we could do. And I really believe in this, in having partnerships and trying to move our community forward together. And so we have tried to, and we haven't gotten there yet, but we're working on developing very similar, if not identical, incentive policies. And let's remember that everybody in the city is also a county resident. So city residents, I don't believe, should have to pay twice for incentives. We shouldn't be half and half, half for the county and half for the city, because the city then is paying a good bit more. The Garner report also said we should have an in-house person. I don't believe that that works effectively. I don't like incentives. I don't think we ought to have to pay anybody to do business. But in order to be competitive with South Carolina and other places, we have to do something. And so we're trying to develop a policy. We're going to do it. We need to make it fair, and we need to make it responsible, and yet we need to become competitive with other localities.
Thank you. Deb Hayes.
Thank you. Economic incentives. Nobody really wants to say that they're in favor of this, because it goes against our natural grain to pay somebody to come to a place that we love and believe is the greatest place to live in. However, it is the game that we have to play, and we are unfortunately losing. I was just recently in Charleston, prior to the flood, and talking with them about what all they do, starting at the state level and on the way down, to try and grow their economic development. And they are winning. They are very much winning, and we don't like to think of it as a game, but it is jobs. It is business. It is development. It is vital to our community. So is it something that we have to do? Yes, it is. Can we look at doing it the very best way that we can craft it possible? Yes. The joint city-county, the joint city-county effort is one of the best ways I can see that we can do this. Other states have a lot of help from their state government. We unfortunately do not have that, so we have to look internally to make this happen. Thank you very much.
Paul Lawler.
I wish we didn't have to do incentives, but I live in the real world, and we do. Just look as far back as the BMW plant near Greenville, South Carolina. They got a huge incentive package, and that's transformed that region of that state. We need to have a policy that works, though, for Wilmington. We need to have it focused on businesses we would not get otherwise, so we're not incentivizing somebody that's already going to be here. And then we also need to have clawback provisions. If somebody doesn't perform, we need to be sure we have a way to get that money repaid to us, so we're not just shelling out money for no benefit. So the city has a policy. We just need to be sure that that's the right one and it works for us.
Frank Madonna.
Yeah, the Gardner report's great. I've been studying that, and it's one thing to get a report. It's another thing to execute on any of it in real life. But let me address incentives. I don't have any problem with incentives. Incentives are part of contractual relationships. It's a business arrangement. As long as you're getting what you want out of the arrangement, what's the difference what the deal calls for? So I don't really have any problems with incentives. I don't have any problems with incentives for film or any of the industries that want to come in here. I think we should have a tri-county economic development alliance. I think the county and the city should be working, the counties and the city should be working together on a plan to bring more business to the area. I think we should grow the city tax base by building a higher rise downtown, and I think economic development is the key to making Wilmington a better place than it already is. So I also think we should be consolidating services, and we should be doing that wherever we can. And we should make ironclad agreements to consolidate services with the county so they can't renege on contractual arrangements. And I think all of that can be done. And I think the Garner Report has a great deal of useful information that we can work with.
Thank you. John Presswood.
What does it say? What does the contract say? It's important to have the right kind of contract. It's important before you disperse the money to know what it's going to do. When is the money going to be done? It needs to be done in draws. If we're going to have incentives, I'm in favor of it. If it'll bring industry here, I think it's a good thing. I think it needs to be written well. I think it needs to have strings attached to it. We need to make sure if we're giving an incentive to try to get jobs here, industry here, and a higher tax revenue, that we basically need to make sure it's written correctly and that the money is dispersed when they reach certain stages, and we want to employ Wilmingtonians, people that live here. You don't have to be a native. We just want to employ you if you live around here. Thanks.
Thank you. You're tuned to the Coastline Candidate Forum for Wilmington City Council here on 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn with WHQR's Isabel Shepherd. We're joined by all eight candidates today and a live studio audience. Let's continue with your ideal incentive policy, Alvin Rogers.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Haynes made mention that we are residents of Hanover County. We should rely on the county to handle the incentives. The city should handle what it has in the city already. We have rental properties. We have old businesses. When they stop doing whatever they're doing, or if they're vacant already, then people come in, and if the city perceives it as a change in use, they have a whole bunch of more rules and regulations that people have to comply with before they can reoccupy an existing building. I think the city could do a lot by being more friendly with entrepreneurs and stuff. Although big business is nice, the bulk of the business that we have is small business in this town, and I don't think we should forget that.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
The Gardner Report refers more to local incentives, so I don't want to try not to confuse the state issues. Those are for someone else to solve. We can certainly advocate for them, but that's for our legislature and governor. I do agree the city and county need to work. We're working now to get on the same page in terms of our incentive program. The big issue we've yet to really venture into is that formula, that percentage. If a project's going on inside the city, how much should a city resident be asked to participate when they're already paying their county taxes, which others have already referred to? I'm not a huge proponent of incentives. However, in a lot of cases, we're forced to compete. That's the reality. All our incentive agreements, before anybody thinks any different, have two silos that I've been involved with. You have one that's employees, and it also has a factor of how much they get paid. Then you also have another silo, which is what they will add to the property tax base. And each of them have thresholds they reach to over a 3, 5, 7-year period before they get that incentive. We've never just handed anyone money. But I think the key component, it would be the thing that you can always calculate return on investment in, return ROI on, is that rehabbing, constructing a new building, rehabbing a new building, which adds to our tax base. You can look at what you've spent versus what you're going to take in and do the math and see whether it's a good deal for the city or not.
Thank you. Hollis Briggs.
Of course, economic incentives is a hot point in this area, but it's necessary. If you'll notice how much Wilmington has lost since we lost the movie industry, it's almost been catastrophic. The movie industry by far fed the city of Wilmington for quite some years, and also we coined the phrase Wilmywood and Hollywood East. So incentives is what brought the movie industry here, and incentives is what how we lost it. Now, Atlanta, Georgia has recently built two studios that has taken the movie industry from Wilmington, and they've gotten it there, and so now that area is prospering with the money that Wilmington has lost with the industry. Now, there are some other businesses as well that Wilmington has tried to court with incentives, and that plan has worked out well. AI Pharma, Castle Branch, those businesses were fed with economic stimulus money here in the city of Wilmington. So I am for the economic incentives.
Thank you. And we now have a question from a member of our live studio audience. Would you please say your name and direct your question? We will begin with Deb Hayes.
I'm Catherine Graham, and I'd like to have you discuss the noise downtown late at night. I'm not opposed to restaurants. I love the bars. I love seeing all the people there. But by 2 o'clock in the morning, it gets really loud.
Thank you. Deb Hayes.
Thank you. Appreciate your question and appreciate you being here. There is a noise ordinance in place, and it does get broken quite a bit and is very disruptive to the local community, especially the historic district and those living in the central business districts. This is something that is going to needs to be patrolled and have greater focus on. It's a quality of life issue for our residents, and we need to make sure that they feel comfortable, they feel safe, and that they can enjoy all that Wilmington has to offer while living in a quiet and peaceful neighborhood. I believe that this is something that we can work towards with municipal services districts. I think this could be something that we could implement, and it would afford us the opportunity to make sure that the noise ordinance is upheld. Thank you.
Paul Lawler.
This is really about the implementation or carrying out of city policies and city programs. We have a noise ordinance that establishes a level of noise and a procedure for enforcing it, but it's not being enforced. And that happens throughout the city on a variety of issues. So we need to be sure that the rules about noise and other code issues like that are enforced so that we have the kind of community we expect. We're going to have more of these issues in the future as we have more people here, so it's really important we get a handle on this and related issues now.
Frank Madonna.
Downtown Wilmington needs to be the jewel in the crown, and as Pender and Brunswick continue to grow, everyone is looking for a center to come to. And I believe the downtown area needs to be improved greatly. And I don't think we can attract new businesses with live bands performing at a retail stores on Sunday evenings. It just doesn't make any sense to me how we run our downtown operations. There's too many bars, there's too many ordinances being broken, and laws are not being followed. People are spilling out of the bars and onto the sidewalk at all hours of the day and night, and you've got a wonderful historic district next door looking at all of that and not being able to control it. And then that spills right into the historic district right through the evening and all the early into the morning hours. So I think the entire downtown district needs improvement in terms of image and the way it's managed, and law enforcement should get on it as quickly as possible.
Thank you. John Presswood.
Manners. It's too bad people don't have them at 2 a.m. I'm sorry, but sometimes they have a little too much alcohol in them. So what do you do about it? You got to have some people that watch them. Maybe some police officers down there a little more. I know they're busy. I know there's sometimes other things that pull them away, but we need to have enough enforcement down there, and it needs to be on all sides of downtown. I think sometimes there's a disconnect on different sides, so we need to make sure it's uniform. And I just think we need to be a little more responsive in that manner and have citizens' input heard. Thanks.
Thank you. And now we're going to ask Catherine to read the question again for those listeners just tuning in to this Wilmington City Council Coastline Candidate Forum.
My question was, what do you think about all the noise of the bars downtown? What can we do about this?
And that's Alvin Rogers.
Yes, ma'am. We've had similar problems in my neighborhood with college students. We have a street in my neighborhood we lovingly call Fraternity Row. At night, it'll get loud, and we've found if you work together in your neighborhood, you can utilize the existing rules and regulations, and we've pretty much solved our problem, but it takes neighbors to work together. If we have a place, building A, that's causing problem and we're down the street, if it's bothering a neighbor, he'll call the police, and then he calls me and will say, the noise is getting kind of loud. Do you hear it? I walk outside. If I hear it, I'll call. We'll call another neighbor. You get two or three neighbors calling about the same spot. The police don't waste time. They'll come down and shut it down. And the other thing you do is you keep a record of it. On this date, at this time it happened, this address, and you keep a record, and you can forward it to code enforcement. Eventually, if it's a repeated problem, code enforcement will notify not only the people that are in there, but the property owner as well. There are fines to be implemented, and we've had pretty good success using existing rules and regulations. You just have to know what's there and how to do it.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
I don't live downtown, and Ms. Graham probably does, judging from her question. So she's a lot more, she's a lot closer to it than I am. But I do come down quite a bit for dinner and other events, and I feel like we have addressed this problem to a great degree, especially with crime. The Joint Task Force with the county, you can look at the crime stats; they're way down. We took ABC permits from the worst offenders; those bars closed. The Rhino and the one across from it and a few of the others were causing most of the crime, and a lot of the issues were spilling out into the streets and not controlling their patrons. Mr. Grady helped lead an effort prior to me being on council to limit the growth of bars. Our police now have the golden badge, from the ABC ABC board, to be able to go in at without cause into bars. So I feel like we've made headway there. It's the only place in town where we really have community policing. So I'd hope that folks are getting to know their community police, the police officer they see on foot, riding by slowly on bicycles, and stop them and discuss the issue, the problem, particular offenders, particular times, places. Call the police. Call code enforcement. Let us know so we can try to enforce the noise ordinance. But it's certainly something that we're working on. It's a tough balance. Last night we had a situation where somebody wants to go residential by a train track. We'll no doubt get calls before long about noise by the train track. But the same thing happens downtown. People move downtown, and the noise should not be a surprise in some cases.
Thank you very much. Hollis Briggs.
That's kind of touching. What Wilmington has done is they've concentrated several bars in one area. Around closing time, when last call hits, it's going to get a little noisy. Now, yes, it can be policed a little more, but what's going to end up happening is, well, you probably end up arresting a few more people. But I think it's just a problem that's going to have to be, like I said, policed a little more on their side and tolerated a little bit more on your side until the city of Wilmington breaks up that concentration of bars in that small area. It's just going to be just a little noisy.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. It's definitely a quality of life issue, and I can appreciate that. I will say that code enforcement is generally throughout the city by complaint only. And I agree with Mr. Rogers, if you get enough people together and keep complaining, then something does happen, and if it's chronic, it will certainly be addressed. And as Mr. Anderson noted, it has been addressed, and we have less bars down there, and we've shut down a number of places that were chronically troublesome. So I believe that's very important. The other thing is, the more people we get living downtown, and we have this new development that will come downtown, if we can get more people living there and enjoying their life there, it will change the culture of downtown. And I do want to reiterate, somebody said about the police. Downtown is where we have community policing. And we have made enormous efforts and spent enormous resources to make downtown, to preserve the character, the historic character of it, and to try to improve the quality of life. And we're not there 100% yet, but we're certainly working on it, and I can appreciate the issue.
Thank you. This next question begins with Paul Lawler. If you win a seat on council, you will have a hand in establishing city policy and crafting budgets. You'll also face media scrutiny, citizen complaints, and people who disagree with everything you do. Why do you want this job, and what is your best original idea to improve the city of Wilmington?
Why do I want this job? Because I think I can be useful. The issues I find that Wilmington needs to address are public safety, jobs, the delivery of services, and handling the growth they're going to have. My background, an accountant, working with economic developers, gives me some professional background in that area. When we moved here, we organized a neighborhood watch, which gave me a lot of insight into the public safety situation and how we handle crime around here.
And then serving on the comprehensive plan gives me background and understanding of the growth that's coming and how we deal with that. It's not going to be easy. All the decisions in the future for cities are going to be tougher. It's not like the days when there was lots of green property and you say, yes, another development, that's wonderful. Those days are gone. Everything's going to be infill, and it's going to be weighing competing interests. The best way to do that, though, is to be very transparent and upfront about what's going on so people know why the decisions are being made, know why the city is doing something and what the city's logic is behind those decisions. My best idea? DPAC, or Downtown Parking Advisory Committee, recognized that the city's parking marketing money wasn't being used well and proposed that that be transferred to WDI and DBA. They created the Bring It Downtown campaign, which you've all seen, and so it's much more impact for an existing expenditure than what we had before, and that's the kind of efficiency we need.
Thank you. Frank Madonna, why do you want the job and your best original idea?
Well, firstly, I want to commend all those involved in the process that are presently in office and those running for office, because this is public service. Basically, the only satisfaction that comes out of this is helping others and believing that you can improve the quality of life and conditions around you. And I sincerely believe I can help. I have 40 years of experience in public and private sector. I don't need another career. I just think I can help. And I probably can be most helpful in economic development is where I spent a lot of time in the private sector. And the thing that I would concentrate on is getting a group of people focused on performing in terms of economic development. Quantitatively analyze their performance in terms of how many prospects they bring in here and how many companies actually come in here and reside here. The other thing that I'm interested in is districts, and that seems to be a dirty word. But I believe that districts are important. There's a greater appreciation of neighborhood needs when we are in districts. In the eastern part of the city, people feel that they don't have any representation at all. Landfall, Masonboro Loop, Greenville Loop, this area represents a significant amount of tax base. And they could stay at large if they want to, but I would think they'd be better served if they had someone representing them, as well as the black community would be better served if they had someone representing them. Other than that, everyone is fighting for limited resources.
Thank you. John Presswood, best original idea and why you want the job.
I want this job because I love this town. That's why I'm running. Simple as that. I want to help people. I volunteered as a soccer coach. The main thing that you learn when you do that is you got to have a game plan, and I got a plan. It's about balance, balance of use of land, balance of use of having jobs, balance of having better transportation. I want to open up the main arteries. I want to keep people off the neighborhood roads when there's no place to go. I want to reconnect Wilmington with rail, basically to Raleigh, to Charlotte. I want passenger rail back. I want commuter rail in town. I'm willing to negotiate trolley, commuter rail. I like the antique rail. Well, we'll see what the most economical one is. I don't know yet. We'll see. I guess they're doing a $300,000 study on that, so they're probably smarter than me. So anyway, that's it. And one of my big ideas is an innovation building. There's a lot of small innovation going on, and that's great. There's a lot of incubators around town. I just want one central building, high-speed internet, gigabyte service to provide it to that building. I want it to be upfitted. It would mirror Chattanooga, Tennessee, and see what they've done. They've brought in a lot of jobs. Thanks.
Thank you. Alvin Rogers.
Well, my first response was it seemed like a good idea at the time. But for years, probably over 20 years, in fact, I've been going in circles with the DOT regarding the intersection there at Oleander and College Road. The state back in 2008 was wanting to spend $38 million for an interim project, which was not going to solve the problem, just try to postpone it until they could find spending more money onto it. At this point, when they started widening Kerr Avenue to 5-lane, it's going to come down eventually to Oleander Drive and dump more traffic. And if they do two roads at the same time, College and Kerr together, they can solve both roads' problem with one money, and it would solve the problem for as long as I'm around. But traffic control, better streets, looking out for neighborhoods, and I've got 30 seconds left. But I'm a wise man told me brevity is its own reward, so thank you.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
Well, two big questions scrapped into one, so I'll try to go fast. But I've had a lifelong interest in government and politics, in college, served on Capitol Hill for a summer as an intern. So it's, you know, something I've been interested in. Two, you know, I was looking for a place to give back to my community. It's a place I love. I'm raising a family here. My wife's found it at our church. I didn't find my niche there. This was something I really picked up in a sermon to try to serve the city and serve the citizens to be just the same. So that's something I pursued and was fortunate enough to get elected. But the main reason is the three children I mentioned. I'd like to see our, you know, I want to have a hand in shaping the future, something I'm willing to work for every day and sacrifice so that hopefully they'll have jobs and it'll be a community they want to return to one day. Best idea, I'd like to return, go back and revisit two that I proposed during this last count 4 years with a newly seated council. One would be to, a couple times a year, take the council meetings out to the residents in their parts of town so they don't have to venture down here, especially elderly people, other people that don't have transportation. Two, bring in a consultant to work with the police force to improve customer service, whether it be a routine traffic stop or a highly charged criminal arrest. Thank you.
Thank you. Hollis Briggs.
A few years ago, when I was a child, my father ran for city council. And I helped my father quite a bit in that campaign. I can still remember passing out leaflets to people, to voters, potential voters, and it got me energized. So I became interested in politics at a very young age. I moved off, went to Atlanta, and engaged in politics there as well. And I've always wanted to serve the people. In my present position as the chairman of the ML King Celebration Committee, I'm responsible for one of the largest ML King celebrations in southeastern North Carolina. And a lot of people don't like some of the things we do with that as well. So I'm very well on people not liking things that you do. One of the things I'd like to see done here in Wilmington at this time is, you know, if you don't have trash service and there's trash on the side of the road, it stays there for weeks and weeks at a time. And we're a tourist city. So we would like to see that trash removed. I'd like to see us create some gentlemen that maybe have some nonviolent offenders and have a trash crew to go by and pick up the trash at residents that don't have water service so we can make our city better.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. I happen to believe that government and politics are both good things. I believe they're the basis for a civilized society. And you may on talk radio not hear that any longer, but that's how I was raised. And I was also raised to give back to your community when it's possible. And I have a master's of public administration, and I have a very successful business career, as well as having worked for a member of Congress. So I think I bring a lot to the table, and really, you have to have pretty good reading comprehension skills to be able to assimilate all of the information and then move forward and make decisions. And I believe I'm somewhat successful at trying to do that. And I'm also willing to ask questions when I don't understand what's going on. So I really enjoy it, and I believe it is a public service. I believe it's giving. We're certainly not in it for the big bucks. I think the other thing, something that I've done, a best idea, number one, I saved the city $80,000 every other year by changing the city election process, where you don't have an election and then a runoff. That was a very big idea, and it was unanimously accepted. And now I'm working on potential new legislation about drones over private property, which seems to be a problem in some of the neighborhoods. So that's the next thing I'm working on right now.
Thank you. Deb Hayes.
I moved here 20 years ago, and I'm proud to say that I can now consider myself a local. I think that's important. When I moved here, I began volunteering and looking for ways that I could give back to the community and also to learn about the community. And what I learned was it has a wonderful quality of life, and I sell that quality of life every day, and I live it every day, and I'm proud of that. Through all my volunteer activities and serving on the Planning Commission and the Housing Authority and working on the Comprehensive Plan, I believe that has given me the experience that I need in order to be on City Council, and that's why I'm running. I want to give back. I believe I have the experience. I've proven my commitment to this city and to this area, and I have the vision with which to lead the city going forward. That leads me into my best original idea, and I can't say that this is original because it's a compilation of everybody out there, but it is about the Comprehensive Plan. Thank you. The Comprehensive Plan is the basis by which we are going to move forward in this city. It is our game plan, our roadmap. It encompasses everything that we have to move forward to revise our land development code, to bring in new jobs, to refocus on crime, and to clean up our city overall. It is the basis, and it is something we must get past and implement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Forum for Wilmington City Council. We're just about to go to news headlines from NPR. We will be back at 1:06 with part two of the forum. You're listening to WHQR Wilmington, 91.3 FM and HD, and WHQR.org, serving Myrtle Beach at 98.9 and Lumberton at 94.1. The news is next. Welcome to part two of the Coastline Candidate Forum of 2015 for Wilmington City Council. We are joined today by all eight candidates competing for three open seats and a live studio audience. I'm your host and moderator, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and I'm joined today by Coastline producer Isabel Shepherd. If you'd like to ask a question of the candidates, email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. You can also give us a call at 910-343-1138. And we are going to take a question from a member of the audience in just a couple of minutes, but we will start with Isabel Shepherd. And please direct your question, Isabel, to Frank Madonna.
Wilmington has seen a rise in violent crimes over recent years. How would you work to combat this issue?
Well, there's crime in every city, and it just can't be wiped out. It has to be controlled. And from my observation point, this police force is doing a very good job at controlling a very serious crime problem. There are limited resources to work with, and they could, of course, use more detectives and more policemen on the street. And so it's a question of the resources needed to combat an extraordinary amount of crime in a small city. There's nothing else you can do except put more feet on the street and put more resources to the problem. And that's what I would work towards. Thank you.
John Presswood.
It's a front porch solution. We need civic groups. We have civic groups, but we need direct inclusion of the civic groups in the city government. And that's one thing I've been thinking about, and it's an idea I have. There's all kinds of civic groups, so just want to let – I know you're here. I know they're there. But I want to see direct inclusion and infrastructure there for you. The other thing is bike and walk patrols. We need more policemen and police presence, basically, walking through the neighborhoods, getting to know the community members, and I think that would help. So looking out for each other, better police presence, civic groups. Thanks.
Thank you. Alvin Rogers.
I wish there was a simple solution to it, but if there was, somebody would have already solved it. I have confidence in Chief Evangelis and Sheriff McMahon that they, working together, have begun to turn things around, and I'd like to see that continue. Neighborhood policing, I like the idea as far as with officers covering a specific area, get used to that area, get to know the people, rather than rotating each time a different officer comes out. I think having them in districts might help on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
Well, I think we had a tough summer a couple summers ago, and unfortunately, you know, again, you like to see that coming. We didn't, but I think the reaction was strong, and a lot of people in the community came out and got together and came out with the proper solutions. Our chief has proposed expanding community policing, and we're unable to fund that this year, but it would be a priority for me going forward. That was a priority now, but it would be a focus and a main priority for me going forward. He talked about expanding it into the area he calls District 5, which is roughly Walmart to the college. Walmart's our number one call spot we get in the whole city. Takes up a lot of police officer time. Be nice to expand that there. And then, again, the next step I think he has is the South Side. These programs wouldn't look just like downtown. They'd be different from each neighborhood, but that's something that I would place high priority on in the next 4 years. The other is to continue our efforts to work with nonprofits that work with at-risk youth, such as RAP, such as Dreams, such as Kids Making It, such as the Boys Clubs, and also work with folks that have been released from incarceration, with the folks like Phoenix Employment, Frankie Roberts Group, and in that way try to intercede before it happens and keep it recidivism down. Thank you.
Hollis Briggs.
The recent spike in crime in a couple years ago, like Mr. Anderson said, was not foreseen. I think a lot of times we kind of get blinded to some of the criminal activity that eases into your area. I think we need to work on recreation, and we need to give kids a little bit more things to do to occupy their time so they won't get associated with bad choices that sometimes they make. Also, I think we need to put a little effort into more of a summer job program. We need to fund summer jobs for kids so that they can have something to do. I think we allowed our kids to get a little too idle. And as my mom said, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So we didn't see it coming because I think also we need to get into more organized sports. I think baseball has gone to the side. Nobody cares about letting kids play baseball anymore, but we need to work on our kids and their after-school things to do to keep them busy. And also, we need to work on getting some more jobs here in the city so people won't have to use crime as a way to feed themselves.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. I think the greatest effort we could make is to continue community policing and to improve and expand that program. The only place where it's really happening is downtown, and I won't repeat what Mr. Anderson said, but I agree with that about Walmart and that area for call service. Our service areas take up one half of our budget for the city, police and fire, and we have started using retired police from other communities like Leland. There are a number of people that are retired, that are law enforcement officers that have moved in here, and they're able to do some of the things on a part-time basis like detective work and things like that and help solve crimes. The more crimes we can solve, the less opportunity, the less sense of opportunity that there is. I do have confidence in Chief Evangelos. I think he's worked hard. He's tried to move the community and the policing into winning the hearts and minds of folks and not be adversarial in any way with the police. And I think that is a tremendous step in the right direction. Community policing is a good potential solution, but it has to be phased in because of the tremendous cost of it. We're doing it downtown. We're going to move it into, and we are already operating in districts, and everybody, people in this room and people listening and everyone else, should get to know the police that are responsible for your neighborhood. I see them walking around in my neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Deb Hayes.
Thank you very much. I'd like to expand just a little bit on community policing. I am a firm believer in it, and we actually have expanded it somewhat. The Wilmington Housing Authority has asked that the Wilmington PD and the New Hanover County Sheriff form a task force. We did this about a year ago, and we are paying extra for that. But to bring them into our sites, the Housing Authority sites, to help us clean up the gangs, help us clean up the crime, it has been an overwhelming success, replicative of what is happening downtown. This is something that really works, and I am a big proponent of it. All of our residents know the police officers. The children know the police officers. The police officers know who is supposed to be there, who's supposed to be in the neighborhood, and who isn't. It is a proven form of policing, and the sheriff and the chief are doing an excellent job. The other thing is, certainly get our neighborhood organizations more engaged with and working in conjunction with our law enforcement officers. I'd like to also think about us working more and engaging our partners and use existing resources that we have. One idea is for our schools to open up our gyms and our schools during the summer and weekends to help keep these kids off the street and give them something to do using our resources that we currently have.
Thank you. Paul Lawler.
Thank you. Good news is the crime has been reduced over the last decade or so, but we still have a ways to go. The answer to this is to support our police. We need to give them the resources so they can do their job. We also need to work on prevention. It's great to know somebody will get arrested, but I'd really rather not get bopped on the head to begin with. But we do a bunch of things. We try more lighting. Downtown has put some brighter lights in. That's been very good on North 3rd and North 5th, North Front. We look at recreation centers. There's a proposal to open up some of the school gyms to give the kids something to do. The city's funded one basketball, police basketball league, and that's worked very well. We need to work with the nonprofits. There's a lot of nonprofits out there doing things with some of the troubled youth. We need to keep focusing on that so we can get the most impact there and divert some of these kids from the ways that they shouldn't go. Similar church groups. There's a lot of church groups doing things, but these need to be coordinated so that we have a good effort. Sterling Cheatham, the city manager, has just proposed a series of youth violence initiatives. Some of those are as simple as getting the police to meet more with neighbors so there's better understanding there. Another one that seems very simple is after-school programs. We have a lot of after-school programs, but there's no transportation. So if we can finish that transportation piece, then we'll have something good going on there for the youth, and that'll help prevent violent crime.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to the Coastline Candidate Forum for Wilmington City Council, broadcasting today on 91.3 FM and streaming live on this Wednesday at WHQR.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn with Isabel Shepherd. If you'd like to ask a question, you can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And now we have a member of our live studio audience. Katrina, would you please stand up and read your question?
Thank you. Katrina Knight, I'm with Good Shepherd Center and a member of the Cape Fear Housing Coalition. The city has a long history of completing many analyses that every year point to a severe shortage of affordable housing throughout the city of Wilmington, but particularly for seniors, persons with disabilities, the very lowest income. At the same time, though, City Council has a very mixed record, shall we say, of supporting affordable housing efforts that come before them. So there's a real disconnect for folks who want to address this issue. Other communities in North Carolina are seeing some real success using some creative strategies, like the creation of a local affordable housing trust fund, say through a housing bond or dedicating a penny of the local property tax. So I'm wondering what you would do to not just further, but actively further the cause of affordable housing throughout the city of Wilmington, including whether you would support the creation of a local affordable housing trust fund.
And we'll begin with John Presswood.
A safe home, a warm bed, a good meal. It's crucial. Otherwise, people will resort to crime. You need them to, that's the fundamental need. You need safety. So, yeah, I would support that. And I think that we need to do more as a city to help each other out. We need to make sure we have enough shelters also just for the immediate need when people Obviously, the affordable housing is a little more structured, and it may not meet an immediate need. So we need to make sure we have enough shelters here and do everything we can to support our nonprofits. And if that means giving a little money, then we need to do it. We need to make it happen. Thanks.
Thank you. Alvin Rogers.
The Affordable Housing Trust Fund I'm not familiar with, but it does have potential. That would be something I think the city staff should be directed to look at and see how it would fit in with us. And I would be in favor of it if it were, if it's working elsewhere. I don't see why it wouldn't work here.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
Well, I would not support, you know, raising taxes for this. However, there's a push for inclusive zoning, which I also would oppose in terms of making it mandatory. I have seen other cities and other counties that I've read about that put it out there, a formula out there to where if they'll meet that, they'll get certain benefits, whether that means a city helps with maybe tearing down an old, you know, dilapidated property, whether it means some curb and gutter infrastructure, things that would help that developer if they do affordable housing there, help them make the project make sense. And so I'd like, you know, I think we should pursue developing a policy that is an option. It won't work for a lot of people, but there may be cases where that would work with just a little bit of help.
Hollis Briggs.
I think just like in the recent crime spike that happened a couple of years ago, homelessness has snuck up on us, and it's really ugly. Affordable housing is really something that we really should work on a lot more. I would be in full support of it. As far as the homeless things with the shelters, very recently, about 2 months ago, a shelter closed over on Red Cross Street. And we allowed the shelter to close, or the city allowed the shelter to close without trying to help fund it. Now, all those homeless people have taken to the streets over in the woods behind Love Grove and some other wooded areas. That's not what we should be doing as far as affordable housing. The woods are not affordable housing. So we need to work on that situation and see if we can't, number one, try to reopen that shelter so we can get those homeless people off the street. Habitat for Humanities, like I said, has done a wonderful job of placing houses in certain areas on the south side of town. They've built several houses on the south side of town, and they're putting people in those houses, and that's a great thing. But I am for more affordable housing.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes, your ideas on expanding affordable housing in Wilmington.
Yes, thank you. I'm not familiar, Katrina, with the trust fund thing, and I think that's certainly something that we should study. The Wilmington Housing Authority certainly tries to keep people from falling through the cracks and tries to overcome the desperate situation of homelessness. And as Katrina knows with Good Shepherd, there are a number of nonprofits out there that are working hard to try to meet that need in our community. I do think when you're talking about affordable housing, we're talking really about workforce housing, people that get up and go to work every day, and they can't afford to live in the city because of the price of housing in this city. And so they're living out further out in the county, in Pender and Onslow and different places. I do think instead of demanding that a percentage of a development be affordable housing, that we could somehow try to, in some way, incentivize that, to try to encourage people to include some affordable housing and workforce housing in any kind of new development. I think it's very important to take tax money that we have to try to hold the reins on tax increases, but to try to take the money that we have and leverage that in working with nonprofit organizations that are trying to meet this need.
Deb Hayes.
Well, I've spent the past 9 years working on improving, increasing, redeveloping, redesigning our housing stock for affordable housing. And affordable housing encompasses many things. It does encompass workforce housing. It also encompasses seniors. It encompasses disabled. It encompasses veterans. It also encompasses income-based. We definitely need a focus on this, and I have spent many years working on this. One of the things that we've most recently done is we've put forth cottage housing option with our land development code, that this will help with a great deal with seniors, with disabled, with workforce housing. So it does hit a good portion and a broad spectrum of that. The other thing is that we need to do is, I believe in positively incentivizing. Not necessarily with money, but we can do things with infrastructure, with the city helping to make the builders and the developers' projects work for affordable housing. One of the things that we could do is fast track these builders through the permitting process in order to help their project move forward as long as they hit these certain criteria and help them. Instead of being negative and forcing them to do something, let's incentivize them and get them to want to do something. Thank you.
Paul Lawler.
Yeah, affordable housing is getting to be an issue because these are people who work, they have jobs, but the housing prices are getting beyond their reach, and that's going to become, it's getting to be more and more of an issue. There's a new challenge to that. We have a lot of investors buying up housing, which they then turn around as rent on the VRBO and Airbnb. That's taking inexpensive stock out of the pool of stock, and that's going to make it even harder for some of these folks to buy housing. So it's a challenge. I know the realtors are working on this. They're looking at a package of incentives to do things. There's an affordable housing coalition. They've got a summit coming up at the beginning of November. So there'll be a lot of ideas out there. The growth that the Wilmington expected to have will be a great opportunity to address some of these issues if we can work on them and use, as part of that growth, include some affordable housing in that development. That way we can be sure there's affordable housing so people of all incomes can enjoy living in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Frank Madonna.
Katrina, I am a big fan of yours, as you know. Katrina does a fabulous job at Good Shepherd, and I'm a huge fan of Good Shepherd. The most fun of my week is Monday mornings when I'm an assistant cook to John and Larry, who are there, have been there for 25 years, and we serve 150, sometimes 200 people who desperately need a great meal, and we make a great meal, by the way. I also contribute to Good Shepherd in a silent auction every year, and all of my friends around me and neighbors, they contribute as much as possible. I would certainly support a trust fund for the homeless. I think affordable housing should be for everyone. No one should be homeless in this town, and no shelter should be closed. And I would support any way to get people off the street, and I know you spend every day trying to do that. And I applaud you for that. Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Forum here on HQR News 91.3 FM. We're also broadcasting live this Wednesday at WHQR.org, audio and video. You can take a look at the candidates. This next question was called in a little bit earlier. Isabel Shepherd, would you read this question? And we'll begin with Alvin Rogers.
Sure. This question comes from Alan. What do you plan to do about the persistent flooding of the same streets that have been flooding for the past 25 years?
Flooding is a project that the city has already been working on. Over in Winter Park, they actually did a project down Macmillan Avenue, Pine Grove Drive, and solved a problem that has been ongoing for 40 years. The city has stuff scheduled, and we should definitely keep up with that. If we have other areas that have not been identified, the city needs to work on that, identify those, and get them in the projects as far as when they might can be done.
Thank you. Neil Anderson.
Well, along those lines, I think, last night, end of our meeting, we really had to look around and take stock of situation in other parts of our state and other parts of, and other states, other cities, Columbia, and look, we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on stormwater. And I think as a result, we're not sitting here, completely out of business and everybody's at home. I think we really fared well because of the investment we've made in stormwater. It's a monster project going on nearing completion that runs all the way from Inland Greens clear behind the college all the way to Those are fairly newly annexed areas that it's long past due that they got what they, you know, what they deserved by being annexed. Runs all the way over to Wrightsville Avenue. And there are more, we collect money. It's an enterprise fund. We're constantly planning down the road now anyway. I don't know what we did 10, 20 years ago. Maybe they didn't invest the money. But I know we have been the last 4 years, and I think we're all the better for it. And never has there been a time that's been more clear. I'm not saying it's all done. I understand Alan probably has a problem near him. We'll need to get around to that one, too.
Thank you. Hollis Briggs.
The stormwater situation in Wilmington is being improved, but there is a lot of work to do. On my street, on 16th Street, it's the lowest point in the bottom neighborhood. And at some points, I can row a boat in my front yard. And that's really not acceptable. Recently, the city has come along and they've done some stormwater work over by New Hanover High School that has alleviated some of the flooding in the bottom. So I must say the city is working on the problem. But if you'll go to streets like 16th and Dawson and your car and the water is up to your door, then sometimes you really don't have the patience to wait for the city to try to improve it. So it's on both sides. The city is doing everything it can right now to try to alleviate the problem, but some people are kind of impatient. And like I noted earlier, progress is ugly.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. As noted earlier, the stormwater management is an enterprise fund, and so the people that use utilities, water utilities, are paying into that every month. And the city has a stormwater program, whereas the unincorporated areas of the county do not have that. So as it was mentioned, it's the more recently annexed areas. The city, I mean, the proof of the pudding was the storm we just had, and we had a number of areas that have historically been extremely flooded, a big problem, and we did not have issues. Now, we still had issues like New Center Drive and some other places, but let me tell you, if you want to see something interesting, go and look. I hope it's online for the city's storm water map. That is the best map we have. It's a great map. It shows you all of the projects that have been done, how much they cost, and when they were completed. And it really shows you how hard these guys are out there working. I will say there's some areas where there are ditches, private ditches, that have been stopped up. People continue to put yard waste and things in the storm drains, and that makes it problematic. So we all have to work together. The city has a tremendous stormwater project and staff, and they are as successful, and it's well documented.
Thank you. Deb Hayes.
Well, I couldn't agree more with what has been said about the city. Had they not enacted the stormwater renovations within the past few years, we would have been in a much more difficult situation. And thank goodness we were not like our neighbors to the south, suffering catastrophic flooding, 500-year flooding. So I think it's kudos to the current city council and the previous administrations that enacted this stormwater fund and put forth this effort. We do have some ways to go. That does not help with the existing flooding that we do have. But the good news is there is a plan. It's out there. As Margaret said, go online, take a look at the map. It'll show you what's coming next. It is a problem, but it is being addressed. And I think there's it's just not fast enough for everyone, and I'm so sorry for anyone that has had an experience flooding. But I think kudos goes out to forward thinking and good vision on having this plan put in place. Thank you.
Paul Lawler.
The city has made great progress. They spent a lot of money, and that's great. Unless it's your yard that's being flooded or your street that's being flooded, and then you're not quite so happy. If it'll make you feel any better, Alan, South 8th, which is in front of the city's gym, floods. So the city is having near its properties as well. We have to keep after this. We have to pursue completing getting the stormwater program completed so that we can have the runoff taken care of. And then there's places where people are putting trash in the sewers or in the stormwater drains, or putting trash in the ditches, then we need to also look into some sort of enforcement to get people to not do that, so we're not blocking up the systems and that are out there for us right now.
Thank you. Frank Madonna.
I try not to say much about where I came from and where I grew up, but this may not help the questionnaire, but there's a parkway, river parkway in New York called Bronx River Parkway, and it runs from north to south, and it's a major thoroughfare into New York City. Thousands and thousands of people commute over it every day. It's been flooding out for 50 years, and no one's been able to solve that problem. We're at the mercy of nature. Flood water is a problem, and there's just sometimes no solution for it, and you can work on it and work on it. And I think you have to continue to do that, but I'm not sure you'll get over it anytime soon.
Thank you. And John Presswood.
Mother Nature has the best answer. It's wetlands. And I know the city's had efforts toward trying to enhance and improve them. I think we can go further. I think there's room for improvement. We need to be good stewards of the land. We need to have balance. When we're developing, we need to have pervious surfaces. You know, when you have runoff, it's going to go into the storm drains and you'll reach capacity. This has been a big storm, a lot of water, and I'm sorry if anyone's had a lot of water and been flooded. But I think there's room for improvement. I think we need to help Mother Nature, help the wetlands, and it'll be a beautiful place.
Thank you. And now we'll turn to a member of the audience once again. Sir, if you would please state your name and read your question. We'll begin with Neil Anderson.
My name is Bill Graham, and my question is about the other half of Wilmington, downtown, the piece that is not being addressed by all of the redevelopment that's going on currently. I want to hear about public safety and crime. I think we've talked enough about that. What about the physical improvement while preserving the history that we have? What is your program to do that?
Neil Anderson.
You said the other half. I'll just assume. I'd love to. Would you mind asking him just to refine the area he's referring to? You're talking about the historic district?
Historic district.
Okay, thank you.
40% is being redeveloped on the north side at the present time.
Right, gotcha.
That leaves 60, probably 10 of that is also under redevelopment in the city proper.
Okay.
So we're talking about the central business district.
Okay. Well, in the central business district, there's WDI, Margaret's on that committee, for example, are working on proposing a district, a zone, if you will, that a lot of other there's different names for it, but essentially it's extra property tax on that area in order to give it. It already gets special attention. No one gets the kind of cleanup. It also gets more traffic, more foot traffic, more focus. It is the hub of our region, so it gets dirtier than other spots, and we give it that attention. But if we want it, other cities, Greensboro, et cetera, have done things to make it look more, that area look better, to keep gum off the sidewalk, plant flowers by the trees, et cetera, et cetera. It depends what our citizens want, whether that's they want people walking around giving them direction. That's one piece of it. Other pieces, I think we could revisit the sign ordinance a little bit. We did that early on. It was very controversial, but I see some new things cropping up, again, things you don't expect that ought to be addressed or at least discussed and debated amongst the people that live and work in that area, and all citizens for that matter. But I am concerned about this historic district. I'm worried about the development there and everybody moving up that way. What will businesses do here? So it's certainly something we need to keep an eye on. I know we're renovating Riverfront Park, which I hope when it's done be a much nicer gathering area than it is now.
Thank you. Hollis Briggs.
Recently, the city hired a crew of gentlemen to try to go to Red Cross Street and see if they could fix it. A lot of people in the historic area would like to see the streets return to cobble. So the city has hired a company to go in and remove the asphalt from the cobble streets, Red Cross Street being one. And the streets look better if they're cobblestone. However, The cobblestones aren't aligned under the asphalt, and it's causing a lot of potholes. And like I said, progress is ugly. But I like the idea of returning some of the old streets in Wilmington back to the cobblestone. If we can just manage to get the proper people to maintain the cobblestone. So that is one of the things that I'd like to see in the historic area is the return of the cobblestone streets.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
Yes, thank you. I think we need to understand that downtown, the historic area, the central business district, and certainly the tremendous historic residential area that we have, there's probably nothing downtown more important than trying to preserve that. And recently, I believe it was within the last 2 years, the council did pass an ordinance making sure that we preserve at least the facades and that we incentivize people to maintain the historical character of all buildings within the Central Business District. And it has to do with height and setback, and we're learning a lot of things from similar cities. So I think that we have to accept the fact that downtown is given much more attention, and it's been talked about trash collection, cleanliness, sidewalk cleanliness, da-da-da-da-da, a lot of different things. When you're talking about the northern end, which, Bill, I think that's maybe what you were addressing, too, is the northern end from and the redevelopment up there, that's really a different kettle of fish. And that was decided by a council previous to us that there could be more height there could be more contemporary building there, and there could certainly be more density there. And so that is a different process, and that has been agreed upon by the community prior to my service. So they're really two different things. It's wonderful that we are a community that can embrace both of those things.
Deb Hayes.
Thank you. First of all, our history and our historic district is such a big element of Wilmington, and we must preserve it and we must protect it. And I think we've been doing a good job. We just need to carry that forward and continue that forward. I believe in the idea of having a municipal services district or whatever term that you want to have with that. I'm not big on additional taxation for anyone, but I think we could phase this in to see if it does work in our community, and we could start with a Water Street deck redevelopment. I think that would be an excellent place to put it in and see that works with preserving the area, also with trash collecting. And they also do work with tourists and make sure that people are getting where they want to be and have a safety element. One of the things that we have talked about up here is returning our streets to cobblestone or the original surfaces that they were, and that's wonderful, except we don't live back in those times, and we are more aware of our disabled citizens, and we need to make sure that if we do something like that, we do it with everyone involved. So maybe the side streets that are not as heavily traveled, but also making sure that we have accesses for people that are handicapped or not able to navigate those as the regular citizens. Thank you so much.
Paul Lawler.
Sure. I think I'd like to see a little more travel and tourism focus on our history and our historic district. This is a tremendous resource we have, having these old homes, the old area. And that's something that could bring a lot of history tourists to town, something that would really call out the value of that, as well as supporting our local travel and tourism industry, which is so important and so significant for our economy. But by calling more attention to it, there'd be a lot more support for that area. One of the challenges that area is facing right now is so many of the homes are being converted to businesses. And if that happens, you start to lose the residential character of the neighborhood. And you start to lose that appeal. So there's really two things, an opportunity, which is to call more attention to the area so we have more people supporting it and enjoying that resource, but at the same time to make sure that we really keep the residential area, which is critical to that resource. Thank you.
Frank Madonna.
The historic district should be preserved, of course, and I agree with Paul. I think what he's saying there is that, you know, when businesses creep into the historic district, you're reducing the preservation of the historic district. So I think the historic district should be preserved. And it goes hand in glove with what Margaret said about the downtown. and that the downtown should be built up, and they should complement each other in a way. And there's a third element, of course, not only the northern part of the downtown area, but the rest of the city. I mean, it's 55 miles of city here. And as an example, you could look at Miami, and if you travel around Miami, you'll see 15 different business districts within Miami. There's no central core downtown. And I like to think that we could develop business districts outside of the center of town. And we could do that, and examples of that in some ways are Mayfair and Lumina. And we should have more of that throughout the 55 miles.
Thank you. John Presswood.
The historic district, homes that tell a story. It's fascinating. I love the woodwork. I love the way that we're stored. It's a beautiful place. Wilmington is a really beautiful place because of that, not just because of the natural environment, but because of the people, the stories that they tell. And I love these homes. I really do. They're beautiful. The woodwork, the molding, the windows, everything. And each one has a different story, and we can't forget our history, so we need to preserve that. I'd like to let the General Assembly know we'd really like to improve those incentives for historic preservation. Also, the blend with new and old. We need to be very conscious and careful on how we use our land and how we blend in the historic district with the new development. So we need to be conscious and try to do the best job we can to preserve it. Thank you.
Alvin Rogers.
I think John just nailed it. The incentives on historic property is what brought us a good deal of where we are today. And for the General Assembly to reduce them, I think is a mistake. So we could lobby them to see about increasing incentives. The residential area of it should be protected because that is the history of the place. Adding businesses in will change the flavor of the area. And I do like the fact that the city is working to go back to the brick streets. I actually like it so well, I've started bricking my driveway. I just, at this point in time, I don't have time to finish it. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't want to cut you off. You still had a few seconds. Okay. You are listening to the Wilmington City Council Coastline Candidate Forum for 2015. We do have time to go to a lightning round, and I'm going to ask our master timekeeper, Kate Brandis, to reset for 30 seconds. But remember, we're looking for brevity here. Isabel Shepherd, would you please read the question and direct it to Hollis Briggs?
There has been renewed talk about bringing a minor league baseball team to Wilmington. In 2012, a referendum that would have raised taxes in the city by 2.5 cents to pay for stadium construction was soundly defeated by voters. Has the economic and or political climate for such a project changed? Would you support revisiting the idea?
Yes, I would. I would be in favor of revisiting the idea of minor league baseball. And also to say that in its first effort to come to Wilmington, I think the people were misled. I think people were told that they were going to have an increase in taxes, but only for the people that own property, not for the people that were renting. So people were misled and it was called a stadium tax. So baseball would be good for this area.
Thank you. Margaret Haynes.
I've been on council 5 years. Baseball is talked about at least every 18 months by a number of different people. So it is something that is not going to go away here. I think if it comes here, it has to be more of a private enterprise, and the city might partner with them in some way, but the lion's share of that has to be through private enterprise.
Deb Hayes.
Yes, could this be something good for our city? Yes, but I am in full agreement that this needs to be funded privately with a little bit of public contribution to it. I do think that we also need to look at not necessarily just being a baseball stadium, but let's look at being a multi-service, multi-opportunity stadium that we can have concerts and all types of additional items going on downtown. Again, funded heavily private.
Thank you. Paul Lawler.
Well, I'm sure everybody would love to have a baseball team here if an investor wanted to bring it. But we have needs right now for police that we've talked about. We have needs for transportation we've talked about. We have needs for youthful problems we talk about. We have needs for growing our city right now, and that's where our tax resources need to go, not to a baseball stadium.
Thank you. Frank Madonna.
Yes.
John Presswood. Thank you very much.
Take me out to the ballpark. Yes, I'm in favor of it. I don't want the taxpayers to be on the hook in the degree that we heard the rumors, whether they were true. I don't want the taxpayers to be that much on the hook. I think it could be an economic generator and a great thing for downtown. And I love music concerts and big areas like that. That would be really cool.
Thanks. Thank you. Alvin Rogers.
Well, we have a convention center that I'd prefer to get paid off first. As far as minor league baseball, if somebody wants to come in and use their money to do it, I've got no problem with it. I'd support it. As far as using taxpayers' dollars, I'm not.
Neil Anderson.
Well, as Ms. Haynes alluded to, it seems to never go away. We were on the Legion Stadium Commission, and I got phone calls from concerned citizens from the that were saying, "I hear you're fixing up the field, baseball field out there. Was that what's, you know?" They were all concerned that it was going to be something bigger and better, and it wasn't. I forgot it was a lightning round. Sorry. I think we need to focus on our infrastructure and our core services. But there's a chance, always a chance, that a different deal comes along that the city could warm up to. Somebody donates the land. Somebody agrees to sponsor the naming of the stadium, et cetera.
Thank you. It's time for candidates' closing statements. Each of you will have 60 seconds. We'll begin with Margaret Haynes.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you very much to WHQR for providing this opportunity. I'm honored to serve on City Council. As I just said, I've been on there just completing my first term, and I would like to serve again. Was also honored to be selected by my colleagues to serve as Mayor Pro Tem, and have done that for a couple of years. I believe that all of us should be involved in public service, and I really believe that one of my goals, which I've been working at, is to try to get us to all work together. I believe teamwork is something that will move this city forward, and I keep encouraging and the council to work with the county commissioners as well as the school board and trying to move us forward. Elections are always about the future, and we all care about Wilmington and want to make it the best place it can possibly be.
Deb Hayes.
Thank you so much to WHQR for having us here today and for you all here sitting in the audience. We appreciate you being here and for giving us this opportunity. I believe that my commitment, my experience, and my vision will allow me to bring solid common sense leadership to the City Council and to work with the fellow City Council members. I think we have some real opportunities here in this city. I don't like to look at things from a negative standpoint. I like to look at things from a positive standpoint. We need to think outside the box. We need to use the resources that we have, engage our partners, working with what we have to work with and enhancing that so that we don't increase taxes. We need to get this comprehensive plan moving forward and working that will have a huge affordable housing complex to it, and we'll also have looking forward to a clean city, which equals a safe city. Thank you so much.
Paul Lawler.
Yes, thank you to WHQR for doing this, and thank you for everybody who's expressed interest in this campaign. Wilmington's a great place, but I think that together we can make it even better, and that's what I'm about. I'd invite everybody to visit my website, electpaullawler.com. There I have more information about my ideas and how I think we can move this city forward. But if we focus on the basics, which is public safety, economic development, better delivery of services, and the growth that's coming, we can have the city that we all want and one that we'll be very proud, more proud of. My background brings a lot to this. I've got a lot of experience in the areas that we need to work on, and I'd like to put those to work for the people of Wilmington. Thank you very much, and please remember to vote on November 3rd.
Frank Madonna.
Oh, let me say again that I commend the council. This is public service, and they do a great job at it. And as Margaret says, no one's getting rich at this.
and I want to thank WHQR for the opportunity to speak. I think the council would benefit from some new voices. Several of the council members have been in service here for over 30 or 40 years, and a number of them are involved in development and real estate, and I'm not a developer, and I'm not a realtor, and I have no specific agenda. And I think I would bring more balance to the council. I think sometimes the realtors and the developers lean towards their industry. And I think more balance is necessary. And my last point is I think we need to get more of the eastern side of the city involved. They represent a huge tax base and a huge block of votes. And they seem like they think there's a perception that they are being neglected.
Thank you.
Thank
John
you.
Presswood.
I'm running because I want to help the city. I want to help the entire city of Wilmington. I want to see balanced land use, balanced infrastructure. I want fairness in government. And I believe the collective minds of all the Wilmingtonians here, new and old, and basically I think we can all work together toward a goal of making this a better, even better place than it is. It's a beautiful place, but we can always, there's room for improvement, and I think I can help make that happen. I want to see civic groups where we have collective involvement from the citizens, direct inclusion into the city government. I think that's very important. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening.
Alvin Rogers.
I've worked for over 30 years to protect my neighborhood from commercial encroachment, and it is a stable neighborhood now. I've served on a planning commission, the subdivision review board, and I think roads need to be a priority because everybody is impacted by roads. On November election, if you'd remember to vote for Alvin Rogers, I'd appreciate it. It's an easy name to remember. About a year after I was born, they named a chipmunk after me. Thank you.
Thank you. Neil Anderson, your closing statement.
Well, I've enjoyed the challenges of public service my first 4 years on council. It did take months, to be honest, to get real comfortable. That's one reason I want to run one more time. I feel like I can be even more effective the full 4 years. But I think the biggest thing is you know, there are two of six folks on council now that are retired. I hope to be them one day. Nothing against retired folks. But I think my personal perspective of still being fully employed and engaged in the economy, raising a family here, being a working person, fully working person with raising a family, gives me a perspective that adds to the council, that represents a demographic, a big part of our city. And I think that's something that makes me unique and hopefully one of the reasons you'll vote for me. Thank you.
And Hollis Briggs.
Since returning to Wilmington, North Carolina in 99, I've been a great advocate for the community and its people. I've done a lot of things with the help of nonprofit organizations, with the police department, the sheriff's department, that has moved Wilmington forward. I would like to continue that effort when I get a seat on city council. There's no time like the present to plan for the future. And I think I would be a great advocate for planning for the future of Wilmington, North Carolina. On November the 3rd, vote for Hollis Briggs, Jr. for City Council.
Thank you. That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank our candidates, Neil Anderson, Hollis Briggs, Margaret Haynes, Deb Hayes, Paul Lawler, Frank Madonna, John Presswood, and Alvin Rogers for participating in this forum. Thanks to you, our listeners, and our live studio audience, and those of you who contributed thoughtful questions for the candidates. Finally, thanks to executive producer Cleve Callison, producer Isabel Shepherd, Technical Director Ken Campbell, Operations Manager George Scheibner, Consulting Producer and Audience Wrangler Bob Workman, IT Specialist Lan Nichols, Webmaster Melissa Stone, Timekeeper Kate Brandis, and Phone Screener Meg Young. In case you missed part of this program, you can find it on our website at whqr.org later today. You can download the podcast from iTunes or listen to the rebroadcast this Saturday, October 10th. At 1 p.m. And remember to tune in next Wednesday at noon to hear from candidates for Carolina Beach Town Council. Most importantly, remember to vote. The one-stop absentee period for the 2015 municipal elections begins October 22nd, and it's open through October 31st.
Election Day is November 3rd. For WHQR's Coastline Candidate Forums here on 91.3 FM, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn.